SmithBackToThrow.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Again, Anita Marks, Paul Dottino. As always, you, Big Blue Nation, getting ready for a fun week of football. As the Giants now, of course, they've won their last four. They're sitting 4-6 in the NFC East. Back in the hunt, back in the race. And you have the Dallas Cowboys coming to New Jersey, Dirty Jersey, to take on the Giants this
week.
Who
calls it Dirty Jersey?
Everybody calls it Dirty Jersey, Paul.
You mean the folks who don't live in New Jersey?
201-939-4513 is the phone number.
Oh, you're going to love me today.
939-4513 is the phone number. And also, if you want to get it on Twitter, you can. Make sure you include that hashtag Giants Chat. Paul will be monitoring Twitter throughout the show. So if you have any questions or comments throughout the show, please feel free to hit us up. Schedule for today, we're on with you till 10:30. Head coach Tom Coughlin then addresses the media at 11 a.m. You can tune into that either on the MSG network or online at giants.com. And then, of course, players will be made available after practice, and we'll have all those interviews for you posted on giants.com a little bit later on this afternoon. And a quick reminder, your Big Blue hits later on today, 4 o'clock Eastern time. Mark your... Or I should say, set your alarms so you can tune in on Giants.com. You can watch it on Giants.com. And also, phone lines are open for that show, 201-939-4513. Jim Cordo will be our guest later on this afternoon.
You know what's cool about that show, Anita? I didn't know this until recently, but apparently you can also watch that on your phone, on your phone app. They stream these shows live on the phone. I thought they were only archived. But I found out recently that a couple weeks ago, actually, that they're actually live on the phone, too, so people can see them if, like, they're sitting in traffic in a carpool.
Well, welcome to 2013, Paul Dottino.
Now, here are your hosts, Anita Marks
okay.
And Paul Dottino.
Again, I know we've got some callers already on and an exciting week of football for the Giants. But, Paul, this is our first chance, as always, on Wednesday to sit down and kind of talk about the Sunday game. As we know, the Giants did win. You were very confident that they were going to win. In fact, you called the exact score that ended up at the end of the game. So your thoughts on the game, good, bad, indifferent, things you are excited that you saw, things that maybe you're still a little concerned about moving into this game against the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, I think the best thing I can say, Anita, is that once again, very few missed tackles in the game. The defense played fundamentally sound. We know that the Packers had a substandard quarterback. Once again, this has been the case throughout the Giants' winning streak. But nonetheless, the Giants executed the game plan perfectly. They shut down the run like they were supposed to, regardless of how good Lacy may or not be. They did take care of business there. Of course, they're allowed to overplay the run because they don't have to have a great deal of respect for a quarterback who had been very inexperienced. I thought that the thing that disappointed me... Look, here's what I'm going to say. The Giants played about as well as I thought that they would play. I expected them to win. You said, and I appreciate it, I did predict the score right on the money. I was impressed with the special teams play. Pazinger stopping that fourth down carry on the fake. I thought that was a big deal. I thought the 32-yard punt return by Reuben Randall, which is a season long for the Giants, was a very big deal because this kick return game has been abysmal. I also thought that Eli threw the ball very well, and Reuben Randall and he were on the same page. I thought that was a really good thing. What I did not like that a couple of times on the long throws, which Tolzien was able to make, the Giants got beaten coverage deep. And that was disappointing. The other thing that I thought was rather disappointing was that Lewis Murphy wound up with a bad read on a route and obviously wound up in an interception. So, you know, if the game was closer, that would have made a big deal. But It wasn't, and so it didn't really matter. And then the other thing really that we should really talk about, I suppose, is the fact that JPP, who called his interception in the huddle before the Giants actually went out and ran that play, I think that's a really good sign for his confidence. And we've talked about him having a psychological wall that he had to break through because of his back and then because of his shoulder. I think he may be breaking down that wall right now, because that was the kind of play that you needed confidence to make, and then to go ahead and execute it, it can only make your confidence grow. So I thought that was a very significant play for JPP. And basically, that's what I think.
Also, obviously, the running game back on track. Andre Brown looking just as good. Didn't get as many carries, but looking just as good and running just as hard as he did the previous week. Brandon Jacobs found the end zone, which is good because, you know, he's been dealing with that knee ailment, which we believe he'll be dealing with for the remainder of the season. And if he does kind of course, take care of it properly throughout the week, hopefully he will be active and a go and somewhat of a TD vulture, as we like to call Brandon Jacobs in our fantasy football world. Also, Victor Cruz looking as good as ever. But the big question mark is Hakeem Nicks. And I was reading some reports today that he pretty much took himself out of the game at one point in time.
He did.
And Lewis Murphy came in and, of course, ran the wrong route. Eli Manning threw the interception. Did you have a chance to talk to Hakeem Nicks on Monday? Obviously,
no.
You take yourself out of a football game, you're frustrated. So you did not talk to Victor Cruz? On Hakeem Nicks on Monday?
We had no access on Monday. It was Victory Monday for the first time all season. Tom gave the guys off. Media was locked out. We had conference calls. And so, no, there was no locker room access for us to chat with Nicks. But what bothered me, Anita, and I'm going to come right out and say it, what bothered me about that play, not so much that if Nicks didn't feel his head was right and he wanted to come out for a couple of plays, I'm okay with that if it's going to be that way. But my problem was throwing the ball to Murphy in that spot. You know, what's he got? One catch all season, and you're in the red zone with a chance to really put your hands around the throat of the game, and the Giants' primary receiver on the play is Lewis Murphy. Is it any wonder that he and Eli didn't have any chemistry on the play, that he ran the wrong route, that the ball got intercepted? I mean, to me, that's the last guy. He would have been the third guy in my progression. He should not have been the primary receiver on that play. In my mind, you opened yourself up to the possibility that there may be a miscommunication. That's what happened. That's why the ball got picked. I will tell you, I did not like that call. I thought it was a bad call to make him the primary receiver in that spot, given his little game action this season.
201-939-4513 is the phone number, 201-939-4513. Let's head out to our calls. We've got a ton of them as Big Blue Nation getting ready for an exciting week of football as the Dallas Cowboys come to town. Let's go to D calling in from Atlanta. D, welcome.
Hey, how y'all doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I just one quick question. Can y'all elaborate more on the Hakeem Nicks thing? Because I've never known him to be, kill the locker room or anything like that, but Is he truly okay, or is he going to be a problem for the rest of the season? Because everything's starting to go well. This is the last thing we need, some drama in the locker room.
There's no drama in the locker room with Hakeem Nicks. He's the last one. He's the last one to bring drama into the locker room. I'm sure all the media are going to want to talk to him this afternoon when players are made available after the game. But hey, let's face it. This is a top-notch wide receiver. A legitimate number one wide receiver for most of his career here with the New York Football Giants. He's in a contract year. He took it easy during OTAs and training camp to make sure that he'd be 100% ready to go for the regular season. And he scored zero touchdowns so far. He's having trouble getting separation from DBs. He's frustrated, and he was very, I will say this, in talking to the media, he was very confident coming into this game. He felt that this was the game that he was going to finally get into the end zone. So, in fact,
I thought he was just coasting this season.
Why would you coast on a contract year? You see that Mike Wallace got $12 million. With the Miami Dolphins. I mean, why would you coast on a contract year? This isn't about him coasting. So he's frustrated, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, I'm a professional athlete in the NFL and one of the top-notch wide receivers, and I'm having a year like this where I can't get separation and I'm not finding the end zone, I'm going to be frustrated too. But, you know, it's just, it's, and thank you for your call, D. Appreciate it. Always great to hear from you from Atlanta. But, Paul, just out of curiosity, in regard to coverages, are defenses still respecting Hakeem Nicks? I mean, is he getting shadowed? Are safeties still?
No, not really. I think right now, after the start that Cruz had when he had 100-yard games in three out of the first four of the season, teams were starting to get back onto Cruz again. And quite honestly, yeah, I'm going to be honest. I think teams are paying more attention to Victor than they are Hakeem, which is very disappointing because even in one-on-one situations, Hakeem's not winning those battles. And he's got to. It's too important for him not to. And he's going to have to start winning them quick because he doesn't have a touchdown catch this season.
Are you seeing certain plays in the red zone where Gilbride and Eli are like, all right, let's get him his first touchdown? Are you seeing certain plays?
They have done that a few times. They have force-fed balls to him in the end zone several
times. And what's happened, Paul?
What's happened is either there's been too much pressure on Eli and he's had to just throw the ball awry, or they've wound up throwing one or two guys in the red zone to cover Hakeem. That's where he's been demanding more attention. And then Eli's got to throw it away because he realizes it's not a good risk to try to stick it into a really tight spot when there's two guys on. So the defenses have kind of, and it's a horrible thing to say, I mean, but you hate to say it, but there have been some times when the defenses have taken away Nicks in those spots. And, you know, any really good player should never let that happen to him. Occasionally, maybe, but you know, we're 10 games into the season. You know, I'm not going to tell you otherwise. I'm extremely disappointed in his year. Who wouldn't be?
Well, again, I keep on saying this. Don't think for a second as disappointed as you are, and as disappointed as I am, because I own him in a lot of my fantasy football teams, and I actually started him this week over Bobby Rainey. Yes, in my flex, I did. Tell me about it. Yeah, I think he's 10 times more frustrated. You know how players are on a contract year, Paul. You know, there's no guarantee. The lifespan of a player, an active player in the NFL, is not very long, especially this day and age. You know, a ton of players dealing with concussion issues, knee issues, ACL tears. You know, the contract year, the years that you quote-unquote get paid don't come around that often. And those are the years that you want to make sure are big. So, I don't know. You know, I think he's even 10 times more frustrated than you or I or a lot of the fans. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Ed in Maryland. Ed, welcome.
Hey, guys. I just have to sort of disagree with Nick's problem. The thing with Nick's is that I don't think he's having a down year. I just think not getting those targets as he was in years past. And I think it's sort of like a smear campaign to make it seem as if he's having a down year just so his value drops and the Giants don't have to pay him.
I also
find it kind of funny how people are so quick to blame him or say he's not getting a separation or he's hurt. He isn't the same player. When we have a lot of problems happening on offense, other things, but nobody ever singles out Eli. Nobody ever singles out Kevin Gilbride or anybody else. But the wide receiver who needs a quarterback to throw him the ball, and your quarterback's having an off year, and people seem to want to blame Nick. I disagree with that. I think if Eli looked towards Nick more and actually got him the ball, Nick would make those catches.
Ed, let me just say this. I don't want you to go anywhere. Don't hang up. You know, I'm not sure how often you do tune into the show. A few things. Number one, I've been very critical of Eli. I think there's very few quarterbacks in the NFL that if they lead the NFL in interceptions or close to it, there wouldn't be talk. There would definitely be talk of benching that player. That doesn't happen with Eli Manning. That I doubt that would ever happen with Tom Brady. That, you know, there's certain quarterbacks out there because they've won Super Bowls, because they've been MVP of Super Bowls for whatever reason, okay? It's kind of it's not what have you done for me lately. It's because of your track record, you get a free pass. So that is something that we've talked about on the show before. So I have held Eli Manning accountable this year. In fact, let's commend Paul Dottino here. Paul Dottino went back and looked at every single interception Eli Manning threw this season. Paul, break it down. How many were Eli's fault? How many were a bad route ran by a wide receiver? What was the percentage again?
Yeah, I think the number was seven bad routes.
Right.
Were the part of the problem. Most of them by Randall. 10 of the 17 picks because Eli was under duress, and he was getting pressured in the pocket. And those are the two, you know, primary characteristics of his picks this year, which just show up time and time again.
So Ed, first things first. So yes, we have been critical of Eli Manning on this program. That's number one. And number two, Kevin Gilbride, offensive coordinator Kevin Gilbride, speaks to the media every Thursday, and the issue of Hakeem Nicks always comes up. And Kevin Gilbride is so aware of what's happening. I think he is trying to get Hakeem Nicks more. He adores Hakeem Nicks. He's one of his favorite players. He wants to see Hakeem Nicks really, you know, get into the end zone, feel good about himself. And he's just as frustrated and feels for him just like we do. So there's no Giants organization, Eli Manning, Kevin Gilbride, not trying to work Hakeem Nicks into the mix or trying to help make him have a bad year. That is not happening here.
If I may add, Anita,
yeah.
Last year, Hakeem Nicks was targeted an average of 7 times a game. This year, he's being targeted an average of 7 times a game. Actually, 11 times a game, according to the numbers. So, you know, this caller wants to talk about a conspiracy. I'm sorry, I just don't see it.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Sharon calling from Irvington. Sharon, welcome.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. I was wondering if Cox and Hillis will be playing on Sunday, or what's going on with those two?
Well,
thank you for your call.
The problem that the Giants have, A, they need to know how Brandon Jacobs' knee is going to react during the week to practice, because that determines whether or not he's going to be active or not. Then, B, they've got to determine who's going to do kickoff returns. If it's going to be Jernigan, then they can afford to keep an extra running back up. If it's not going to be Jernigan and it's going to be Cox, well, now guess what? Maybe there's no room for Peyton Hillis. So those are the kinds of games that have to be played during the course of the week before they finally figure it out. I suspect they may not even know till Sunday morning and see how Brandon's knee's doing, and then Tom's going to sit down and say, okay, look, this is the decision we've got to make. I don't think there's any way in the world that Wednesday at 9:51 in the morning, Tom Coughlin knows which of his running backs is going to be active on Sunday. I really believe he does not know right now, and that's the truth. I will also tell you this, of the running backs he has at his disposal, they feel most comfortable with Hillis because he runs the best routes of the running backs. He's got the best hands of the running backs. He's also capable of picking up the blitz. And he's also shown that he's actually a quick study and knows the playbook really well. And that is part of the consideration. But again, ma'am, there are too many other factors involved for me to tell you who's going to play right now. It's just too early in the week.
Let's continue with our calls. We've got a full bank, and why not? This is a big week for the Giants. Keeping pace in the NFC East, the Eagles sitting at 6-5, Dallas at 5-5, the Giants 4-6, and the Washington, I'm trying not to say Redskins. I'm trying to be politically correct these days.
Oh, really?
I am.
Okay.
You know, I'm sensitive, too. Is sitting at 3-7. And they've got a lot of issues going on right now. You hear the latest, Santana Moss came out and said that RG3 needs to take some blame.
Wow.
He did come out post-game after their loss to the Philadelphia Eagles and said that the Eagles knew exactly what was coming their way offensively, which, of course, is a slap in the face to your offensive coordinator, who happens to be the son of your head coach,
yes,
the Shanahan family. Yes, so things are just really bad with the Washington Redskins. I guess that bodes well for the Giants, considering they play them twice in the month of December.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So I do want to go through the schedule, the remaining schedule for the Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. I do want to go over that with you at some point in time in the show. But let's continue with our calls. We go to D.C. How about that? What a nice little segue there. I was talking about Washington. We go
you
to
set that up.
I did not. Steve.
Yeah.
Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call. Great show. First of all, I wanted to go back to last week, if I could, real quick. Paul, I mentioned that in the first
soon as I started talking about how, you know, I was tired of hearing Steve Weatherford getting blamed, and I was going on, and somehow my call got dropped. But you thought I said that, you know, it was luck. And what I was saying is that I was giving Steve Weatherford a lot of credit for, you know, for learning how to be a directional kicker. The luck part came in with the win. I thought it was a bad decision with the win, but just wanted to kind of clear that up. I'm not crazy. I do appreciate Steve Weatherford and everything he does, but what I was saying is a bunch of people wanted to blame him. I was saying we shouldn't even been doing that given the weather conditions, but I definitely wasn't saying that it was luck. That was something he worked on ever since he came to the Giants. I think he deserves a lot of credit.
If I may add, by the way, Weatherford had an outstanding game this past weekend, averaged over 50 yards a kick, and had outstanding hang time on his punts. I thought it might have been one of the best games that he's had in a long time.
Well, like I said, I don't think he can put enough on his value, you know, since he's been here. I think he's been outstanding. But I just didn't like the idea of, you know, doing a directional kick given the conditions. So with that being said, I just wanted to, I hate to pile on, but I kind of agree with Ed's sentiments, you know, completely. But I won't go as far as saying it's a conspiracy theory. You know, I just believe that, you know, Eli deserves a whole lot more of the blame than Nix. And I'm tired of people insinuating that he's hurt. He's not hurt. He's still the same player. He's always been. You get in the area, he'll go up and attack the ball. That's what he does. He's a physical receiver. I'm not saying he's having his best year, but I certainly think that too much is being put, you know, too much pressure. And I feel bad for the guy, naturally, because I love Hakeem Nix. You know, and I'm certainly not going to, you know, be calling out Eli on it, but he's just not able to get the ball downfield accurately. And if you look at it, Nix's average as far as him being targeted is still leading the receivers as far as, you know, the numbers he's been targeted in his receptions. So he just hasn't gotten into the end zone. It's sad, and hopefully that will change around. But I don't think it's really hurting the Giants, you know, management at this point. You know, I'm sure later on they'll be more worried about him getting into the end zone. So I'm not saying it's a conspiracy theory, but I don't think it's upsetting management quite like it is this young man who's trying to get a paycheck. So I think, you know, I just like to see him get into the end zone, obviously, but, you know, like everybody else. And, you know, I feel good about going into this next game. Hopefully, Linville Joseph can have a big year, and that's really what I'm expecting. Excuse me, a big game. I expect to see a lot of pressure up the middle. So, guys, I'll listen to the show off air. Thanks for taking my call. Great show.
Oh, Steve, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. And just to make a comment about Steve Weatherford, you know, because obviously a lot of fans, all they see is what happens on the field. They're not in the locker room like us. They're not around here. They're not around the facility. They don't know the players like we do. Steve Weatherford's personality is infectious. He's just such a great person. He's a great teammate. He has such a great attitude. He's in the locker room, and he's just, his energy is just fantastic. And when you have a guy like that around your facility and around the players, there's value in that, Paul.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And the thing that really impresses me about him is that he's a workaholic. Despite the fact that he is a fun-loving guy, an energetic guy, a guy who certainly tries to lighten the mood in the locker room, it doesn't take away from his preparation. He gives 150% to his job, and nobody is more upset when he has a bad kick or a bad game than he is.
And on top of that, I mean, I'm just going to add the fact that he's a father of three. He loves his children.
Oh.
He's a big family guy. His grandmother comes and visits him
all the
time.
Oh, is that cool or what?
His grandmother comes and visits him here in New York all the time, and he takes her to all his events. Like she's his date to all. I mean, I can't say enough wonderful things about Steve Weatherford. So, anyway, let's move on. I'm probably boring people. 201-939-4513. Let's go to James in Maryland. James, welcome to the program. You're on with Big Blue Hits Live and our Big Blue Kickoff Live. Sorry, Big Blue Hits Live is
wrong show. But
I know.
Okay.
they all bleed together. Big Blue Kickoff Live, Anita Marks, Paul DeTino, and of course you. We appreciate you listening and calling in.
Thanks for taking my call. I totally agree with Paul with the whole Lewis Murphy thing. I mean, that was a bad play. I think if, you know, they didn't have the interception, We could have actually had a blowout. I'm not sure what the score was. But do you know if Jernigan was in the play? Because I don't remember seeing him. And why wouldn't they put him in there?
No, you know, I do not know why Murphy was the selection of choice there. And the only thing I could say is this. It was Eli's first read. And my problem isn't that Murphy necessarily got into the game. I mean, it's fine. If he was the guy who they want to throw in there, that's okay. My problem was that he was the number one priority on the play. He should have been like the number three priority on the play. That's where my issue is. Not that he got in. By all means, you know, fine. Let him play. Let him get in the game if you need him. But why look at him first? Why was he the intended target on that play? I didn't like it.
Was the pressure coming from the other side? Maybe that's why
you
gotta look at him.
No. That play was designed. Murphy was wide left, and it was down inside the red zone. And one of two things should have happened. Either A, it should have been a stop route where he stopped in front of the DB, caught the ball, then made a move to try to score. Or he was supposed to take a quick step and then go out. Instead, he wound up running it in.
Yep,
which totally screwed up his quarterback, because his quarterback is throwing a timing route to a spot. And on a short throw like that, you're talking about a millisecond by the time Eli hikes that ball and then rifles it to the spot where he's supposed to throw it.
Right.
I mean, it's simple. If you have a miscommunication, you're going to have a bad play.
The defender had to actually reach for it.
No question. It was a risky move. In my opinion, right. It was a risky play to call. What are you going to do?
Yeah. One last thing. I think that John Beeson, obviously he's been a godsend. He's been great. And I just hope they can sign him in the offseason because, he's probably the best linebacker. I've been watching Giants football for a while. He's the best linebacker I've seen since Jesse Armstead. Pierce was great, but as far as athletic ability, he's the best since Jesse Armstead. So hopefully he can stay healthy and they can sign him in the offseason. I'll let you guys go because I know you got a lot of calls, and thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling, and thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. I will say this, Paul. You know, a lot of times a quarterback – I get what you're saying, that Lewis Murphy should not have been the first option. But a lot of times a quarterback likes to spread the ball around to keep players interested. And I know that's hard to understand because they're like, what do you mean interested? They're in the game. They're running routes. But if a player is, especially a wide receiver, if a wide receiver is running routes and is not getting any action, eventually it kind of gets sour. It gets boring. You know what I mean? And so a lot of times quarterbacks do like to kind of spread the wealth around to keep players happy and to keep players focused and knowing that they're a part of the offense. And so, you know, that very well could be something that Eli was paying attention to.
My only problem was that it was a very critical part in the game, and I just thought it was an unnecessary chance to put Murphy in that spot.
I mean, how many targets does Murphy get?
He's had two all season.
Okay, so.
Which is why I'm not giving it to him. I'm sorry.
Well, that's not. I mean, that. But why aren't you giving it to him?
Because I'm afraid there can be a miscommunication.
Well, obviously there was, but what if there wasn't?
If there wasn't,
you still.
To be honest with you, here's what I think would have happened as the play developed. I think if he caught the ball, he would have been stopped short for a 5-yard gain, and they wouldn't have gotten the end zone anyway. I don't think it was good play.
Well, okay, but that's not necessarily Murphy's fault.
I didn't say it was Murphy's fault as much as I just think it was a play that. Here's the thing, you know, every quarterback when he comes up to the line of scrimmage, there are certain plays that they think have a high success ratio, certain plays that have a risk factor built in that has a lower success ratio, and I really believe that particular play had a low success ratio. I don't think it had a very good chance to succeed. And that's my problem with it. Because I think even if he had completed the pass to Murphy, I don't think they were going to get a touchdown out of the play anyway. I just don't think so. So it's like, well, why was that play called? Because I just don't think there's a lot of upside to it.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Chris in New Jersey. Chris, welcome.
Hi, good morning, Anita. Good morning, Paul.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to carry over with that last call. The last call, it kind of stole my thunder. I know you didn't touch upon it just yet, but I got to say, Mr. Beeson, JB, however you want to call him, the guy's been unbelievable. He plays with violence. that return after the interception, he just would not go down. You could just see the fight in this guy. I mean, from what I understand, he's a leader on the field, going back even to his Carolina days. And just his sideline-to-sideline play is something that we haven't seen, probably since what that caller had said. And I was a big Antonio Pierce fan, but probably since Jesse Armstead. And it's going to be interesting to see on Sunday, now with a true middle linebacker, a three-down linebacker, how effective he's going to be playing in that middle when you have Witten coming across or going down the seam. How it's going to be a little different this time around, which we haven't seen with a linebacker that actually could run in the middle with these tight ends.
Well, see, if I'm the Giants, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to the sub package and I'm going to put Will Hill on Jason Witten. I'm not even going to worry about giving him to Beeson. I'm going to tell Beeson, you deal with DeMarco Murray and just have a good time trying to stop the run again because you've been doing such a wonderful job. I don't want him covering Witten. I want to take Will Hill, go with the two linebacker set, and tell Will Hill that Witten is your guy. Shut him down.
Right, but I agree with you, Paul. But in the middle of the field, when he's got to play in that middle and he's reading the quarterback, I think he's going to have, you know, he has the agility and the speed to move around.
Sure, no doubt.
Know, in that middle area.
No doubt. You know, yeah. At some point, all these guys who start making plays, got nicknames, at some point, somebody's going to start calling John Beeson the Killer Bee. At some point. I don't know when it's going to happen, but at some point it will happen, and it'll catch on. But you know what? I'm not going to do that yet because he still needs to make some more big plays in big spots, and this team needs to make a run before I start handing out nicknames.
I hear you. All right, great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
201-939-4513. Again, all things social media. Will you check out if we're getting any love on Giants? Make sure you include that hashtag GiantsChat for any questions or comments with you until 10:30 a.m. Eastern time today. Then we've got to shut down because we've got to get ready for head coach Tom Coughlin's press conference. Excited to hear what he has to say. It's a big week for the Giants, getting ready for the Dallas Cowboys. Paul, remind me, what did the Giants give up for Beeson?
It was a low conditional draft pick. We are assuming, we don't know, we are assuming it's somewhere between a 5 and a 7.
But we don't know yet.
We do not know yet. The league does not release that information until the draft.
Based on what we've seen so far this season, and let's anticipate and expect his play to continue, if not elevate, definitely a 5 or a 7 would be a steal.
Without a doubt.
What would you have given up for him then? A third?
Well,
based on what you've seen and knowing that he wants to stay here. I mean, everything that he's communicated, I know that I know right now his contract is done at the end of the season, but he's communicated that he wants to stay with the Giants.
In retrospect, he's probably worth a 3, but with his injury history coming in, and none of us knew, to be fair, none of us knew with his injury history coming in over the last 2 seasons that he was going to be this fit,
right,
this agile, this mobile to be able to do what he's done. So I think it was a fair price at the time. But if you want to play Monday morning quarterback, I think the Giants got a steal.
Yeah, absolutely.
you want to get to these?
Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you throw in some Twitter love?
All right, we got a couple here. We've got Allie Koning, who says, finally getting her beast on in 213. She's got a blog about John Beeson, the guy we were just talking about. We have New York Giant Cap Central says, could the Giants still trade Hakeem Nicks if they franchise him? I think what has to happen is you have to take the franchise tag off a player to trade him, don't you? I don't think you can trade him while he is franchised. But I'd have to check on that. I will research that, Mr. Cap Central, okay? I don't have that answer for you right now.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think the Giants do? Do-do.
Well, let me go back a couple of calls to the guy who was floating his conspiracy stuff and saying maybe the Giants are a little bit happy that Hakeem Nicks is in and having a great year. You got to be kidding me. You've absolutely got to be kidding me. The Giants would be happy right now if Hakeem Nicks had 10 touchdown pass receptions and 1,000 yards. Trust me on that. Because they've got the franchise tag, okay? If he had had a monster Megatron-type season, the Giants could just say, okay, Hakeem Nicks, you're getting the one-year franchise tag. We're going to pay you the $11 or the $12 million for 1 year, and we'll negotiate at some point in the future about a long-term deal. The Giants would hold all the cards because of that franchise tag. Should he have had a true bust-out year like Anita and I had anticipated. So there is no glory and Akeem Nicks having a down year. Please, don't for one second think the Giants are happy about this. Okay, now, we have Devon 423 says Akeem Nicks had TD opportunities this season, but overthrown or drop passes seem to be the issue. It takes just takes one play. Akeem, by the way, I believe, according to my records, has four drops this season, and two of them could have been touchdowns. Just FYI. That's off the top of my head. We have NFL NYG 43 wants to know, Nicks is a pro, so stop the whining. There is an issue, and he needs to get over it. If he wants to go home to Carolina, let him. And then we have M. Farmer 20 said Eli got the ball perfectly in his hands early in the year, and Nicks had several big drops in those first few losses. Not all Eli. And that's what we have so far.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Jason Forbes 91, brand new one, just came in. Anita Marks, I hope you laid the smackdown on Lance Meadow.
For what?
I guess
is he still giving me losses for games I'm not picking?
I got a message from him yesterday about the five games to be picked, and you're no longer on the messages on the email. So I guess he's eliminated you from the pick'ems competition.
Okay.
That was his response, to eliminate you, to give you the hand.
It's better than giving me losses for games I'm not even picking.
I would agree with that.
Let's go to Ann in West Orange. Ann, welcome.
Yeah, good morning. I was just going to talk about Hakeem Nicks, but I would love to see some salsa in the end zone myself.
You know, he's only got four touchdown catches this year. Reuben Randle leads the team with six.
Exactly.
How about that?
Exactly. Yes, definitely, definitely. I still would like to see some salsa too, but I would love to see either, you know, Cruz or Nicks get up in the end zone. Either one, but you know, I'm happy that Randall's getting in there.
I tell you what, Cruz gets a touchdown, I'll do a salsa for you in the Channel 9 post game this week. How about that? I'll try to learn it all week.
Paul, please. Please don't.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go to Dominic calling in from Pennsylvania. Dominic, welcome.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning.
I don't want to spend... thanks. I'm not going to spend too much time on the defense. The defense, to me, has improved greatly since the beginning of this year, of this season. The person I want to talk about is John Connor. To me, John Connor has definitely contributed on offense and special teams, and no one calls in and talks about this guy. He's a multidimensional player. When it comes to pass protection, the guy, he assimilates into a brick wall. When it comes to making holes for other running backs, he hits like a locomotive. I mean, did you guys catch that play where he knocked off that defender's helmet last week?
Sure did. Sure did.
John Connor is dangerous. he's dangerous. He's an athlete that has a problem on the field. Like it just seems that he. A lot like Beeson, they have a way to channel their anger and use it constructively.
Well, remember, they called him the Terminator coming out of school, so it's not like this guy was ever considered anything less than a forceful player.
Well, they called him that because of his name, Paul.
Yeah, but he hit.
I know, but that's how he got the name, because of the movie. I get it.
Yeah, but Anita, the guy's helmet got knocked off at least five or six yards.
I saw it. I'm with you. I am with you. I watched Hard Knocks. I'm good friends with Hugh Jackson. I called him as soon as they cut John Connor, and I was like, "What are you doing?" And when John Connor signed here, I called him again. I said, "Hey, listen, the Giants just signed John Connor," and he said, "You guys got a great athlete. He's a good guy. Great attitude. Great player." He was a number-crunching issue for the Cincinnati Bengals. What I find interesting, though, Hugh Jackson, I said, what's the biggest negative? What's the biggest knock on John Connor? He said he's not athletic enough. I don't know where that comes from. How do you...
What does that mean?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, he's not athletic enough. I don't know. Maybe it was the way that the Cincinnati Bengals wanted to utilize him in the offense, more so maybe as a pass catcher or... more of a, you know, maybe a three-headed monster in that backfield with the law firm and Giovanni Bernard. I don't know. I mean, obviously that's not the way the Giants utilize him. The Giants utilize him as a bowling ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he is definitely a terrorist on the gridiron. He is a terrorist. you know, and let me say this. I think that the key to scoring against the Cowboys will be to run the ball at least 60% of the time to give Eli Manning the time and space needed to get into a rhythm for the passing game. So, you know, Brandon Jacobs, if you're listening, you know, the tandem of you and John Connor, you guys have to truck everything in your path. You know, I just think that, you know, Giants fans want to see blood on the field. We need Hakeem Nicks to show up. I mean, Dallas is going to make some adjustments to double up on Cruz, and we'll try to contain Reuben Randle because of his recent numbers. Hakeem Nicks is the key to winning the passing game. Last but not least, you know, Eli Manning is the X factor, bar none, and he has to throw with accuracy. There's very little room for errors in this game, and you know, I think the key to winning this game is just running the ball a little bit more than passing it. So what do you guys think about that?
Thanks for your phone call, by the way.
I do think that balance is very critical to the Giants' success. It has been during this winning streak. But in talking about this horrific Cowboys defense, they are last in the NFL in terms of yardage allowed per game, last in terms of passing yardage allowed per game. Brandon Carr has not had a good season. Morris Claiborne has been fighting a hamstring issue. He is also not having a good season. In fact, the best of their corners has been Orlando Scandrick, and often he winds up playing in the slot. So if you're going to line up with a standard D and they're just going to go straight up, that would put Claiborne against Akeem Nicks. Okay? So you tell me if you like that matchup or not. I don't know how healthy Claiborne is right now. I know he's been fighting that hammy. I don't know. But it seems to me that Akeem Nicks should be able to take advantage of him. But we have talked three or four other times this year where it looked like Akeem Nicks had a very favorable matchup, and then he did not go out and put up big numbers. So I think I'm through predicting what game is going to be Akeem Nicks' breakout game. I'm just going to put that away. I'm done with that. But what I will say is the Giants should be able to move the ball effectively against this defense. And by the way, they're playing a ton of cover three because they are so weak in the secondary, and they know it.
And I am done putting Akeem Nicks in my flex spot in my fantasy football league until he finds the end zone.
Okay.
Let's. I do, like as I said earlier, I kind of want to break down because obviously we're getting a lot of calls. There's a lot of excitement with Big Blue Nation because the Giants have won three of four, they've won four in a row. But I find this interesting. I did a hit on a news network on Monday, and this was thrown my way from the host, the sports host, Anita. I'm going to throw this to you. Are the Giants pretenders or contenders concerning that three of the last four wins have gone up not against second string, Paul, but third string quarterbacks? Not second, but third string quarterbacks. Josh Freeman is a third string quarterback with the Minnesota Vikings. Scott Tolzien is a third string quarterback with the Green Bay Packers. And Matt Barkley is a third string quarterback with the Philadelphia Eagles. And then you had Terrell Pryor, who was not 100% because of his knee issue and is not even starting any longer for the Oakland Raiders. So that was the question that was posed to me. Are they contenders? Can you honestly say that the Giants are contenders right now, considering that three of the last four games they've won are against third-string quarterbacks?
I'm going to give you an answer that I got from a longtime NFL personnel guy who was on the phone with me yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He said there is no denying what the Giants have done. The winning streak has been impressive. They certainly have improved their run defense immeasurably. But he said they haven't proven anything to me yet until they beat a truly dangerous offense. And so he said, show me on Sunday. If they beat Dallas on Sunday, and by the way, he thought that they would because he does not believe in the Cowboys. He thinks they're going to fold like a cheap tent and does not believe in Tony Romo and does not believe actually in that coaching staff. He believes the Giants will take care of business on Sunday. He said, once the Giants do that, I can now consider them in a different category. And I think that that's probably the fairest way to talk about it.
All right, so in looking at the NFC East, the Dallas Cowboys, as I said, they're sitting at 5-5. Obviously, the Giants play them this coming Sunday. Here's the remainder of their schedule. Against Oakland, at Chicago, against Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers should be back at that point in time. At Washington is just a complete mess right now. And then they end the season against the Eagles. Okay? Now, the Eagles, they're on a bye this week. They take on Arizona, who, let me tell you something, Arizona is flying so low under the radar right now. Bruce Arians has these guys playing big time. Carson Palmer, if he could limit his interceptions and limit the turnovers, they very well could have a better record than they have right now. This Andre Ellington kid is absolutely phenomenal. They have a 1-2 punch in that backfield with Mendenhall. Don't sleep on Arizona, by the way. I think that's going to be a tough game for the Eagles. Then Detroit, at Minnesota, Chicago, and then at Dallas. So, you know, I guess the point I'm making is neither of these two schedules, remaining schedules for the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles, are walk in the parks. I mean, there's some games in there that I feel both these teams are going to struggle with, but none have it more difficult, in my opinion, than the New York Football Giants, the remaining schedule of the year.
Yeah, I think the Giants' schedule is a bit harder than both of those, but I think you could sit here and look at all three of those schedules and say any one of those teams could probably lose at least two, if not three games or more the rest of the way. And that's what makes this thing so wide open, which is why the Giants are not contenders in the truest sense of the word in terms of how we believe contenders are thought of. But they are certainly contenders in this race this year, given the circumstances that have occurred. Look, bottom line is, a month ago we were sitting here, Anita, looking at an 0-6 team, wondering if we were going to watch exhibition games in November. We now know the Giants have some meaningful football to play, and that's pretty fun. And that's about all I can say.
Also, quick note, the Washington Redskin game, that's not going to be flexed. If it was going to be flexed, the announcement was had to be made on yesterday.
Yep.
So that is going to remain the same. So you've got the Giants going up against the Washington Redskins December 1st. That 8:30 p.m. start is going to stay. And then another note with the Philadelphia Eagles, I find it interesting. They're on a bye this week. They come off of that bye. Michael Vick will be healthy at that point in time. And Chip Kelly has a pretty interesting decision to make moving forward. Nick Foles has been absolutely phenomenal quarterbacking that offense for Chip Kelly, even though Michael Vick did win the starting job earlier on in the season. So it will be interesting to see. Look, Michael Vick owns that locker room. But Nick Foles has performed so well. What does Chip Kelly do?
I think he sticks with Foles.
I think he has to stick with Foles. But again, Michael Vick owns that locker room.
Yeah.
Those players, those Eagles, they worship Michael Vick. Worship. It's going to be intriguing to see what happens. But I'm with you. I do believe that Chip Kelly has to stay with Nick Foles. But if he does he lose the locker room, Paul?
You know, the only reason I say no is because Foles has been so flawless. You know, he hasn't turned the ball over yet this season, and he's gotten him a couple of wins and looked pretty good doing it. I think the players, despite the fact that they are in Vic's camp, I think they accept Foles, and I think they believe that they have a chance to win this division with him at quarterback, even though they would rather have Vic with the ball. So I would say he does not lose the locker room.
Let's go to Joe in PA. Joe, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. You're on with Anita Marks, Paul Dottino. Welcome.
Thanks, and good morning. Some observations here. First with Nick. You can see he's very frustrated. Somebody has to sit down and talk to him. He proved before he was tough. He played through injuries and came back and did it first. He can do it again. He reminds me a lot of who's the receiver now for San Francisco. He's really tough. He had his jaw broke. He came up with Arizona. That receiver there, do you know who I'm talking about?
Anquan Boldin.
Yeah. He could be a clone of him. And he can play real tough like him. And Bolden's up in his years already, and look at how he's producing. Knicks can do it. Somebody's got to sit down and talk to him, you know, and say, hey, what's your problem? You can do it. You overcame it before. You can do it. Going on with the receivers, I know you don't want to hear this, but Barton, to me, did more when he was with the Giants than Murphy and their fourth receiver put together so far, what they have done. That's for sure. And another thing coming this weekend, I'd like to see Robinson get in there, get a chance. And there's one other big thing he's got to take in is the weather. I think it's going to be real cold and windy, and I think that plays into our hands where Dallas will have to win the game by throwing the ball, and I think we can stop them there. So it's going to play in our hands. That's all I have to say. Bye.
Okay. I hadn't checked the weather yet. I know Tom Coughlin does check it on a daily basis. 36 degrees and partly sunny on Sunday. Now, of course, the game is a 4:25 start, so I'm sure it's probably going to go down into the low 30s and then maybe even colder as the game progresses. The wind, of course, is not something right now that I'm looking at on the phone app, but that would be a bigger factor than the temperature. The wind is always a bigger factor whenever you're talking about the Meadowlands, for sure.
Let's continue. We go to Roldy, calling in from New York. Roldy, welcome.
Good morning, Anita. Good morning, Paul.
Hi.
How you doing? A few things that I would like to see on Sunday, you know, which is the obvious. I would like to see Eli Manning and Hakeem Nicks get on the same page and have a rhythm going. But the main thing that I really want to see is my defensive line just getting after Romo. I mean, if you remember week one, it was just so frustrating to see how much time that Romo had. And I hate Romo. I hate the Cowboys. To see that man had so much time week one throwing the ball, he did not get pressured at all. It just frustrated me. So what I want to see this Sunday, I want to see us attack Romo. Just hit him hard. Get him on the ground. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Week one, Tony Romo's numbers, Anita. Let me give them to you. 36 of 49 for 263 yards. Two touchdowns, one interception, and two sacks. The thing about that game, which was so surprising, is that everybody came out thinking that Tony Romo was going to wing it and that Dez Bryant was going to have a big game and that Romo was going to do everything he could to get Bryant out of the box quickly. And yet, he wound up favoring Witten and Austin. And Bryant was virtually non-existent in the game. And on top of that, they went with a short to medium range passing attack and showed more patience than most people had seen Tony Romo show in recent years. It was kind of funny. I remember as we were watching that game, people were like, wow, what's going on with this Dallas offense? This is not what anybody expected. So it's going to be, shall we say, curious for me to watch on Sunday. Do the Cowboys decide that they're going to take shots downfield? Or are they going to try to be more patient like they were in week one? Are they even going to try to get DeMarco Murray going? I mean, obviously they should. He is one of the better running backs in the conference, but the Giants certainly have proven to be very stout against opposing runners. So there's going to be a lot of guessing games going on Sunday. This is going to be a good chess match. But ultimately it comes down to whoever executes better. I don't care what game plan you're going to use. Execution is still going to be the determining factor here because, as I said to somebody this morning at the facility, could you imagine if the Giants outplayed Dallas again for the second straight time this year, but because of, do I dare say, six turnovers, throw the game away? I mean, you know, that's something that you just don't know. Recently, the Giants haven't been doing that, but who knows if they're going to do it again Sunday.
201-939-4513. We're going to end with this caller. Also, I have a comment on Twitter I want to share with you. Gerald from Virginia, let's end strong today. What you got for us?
Hey, I was calling about everybody talking about the weather, about this, about that. All the Giants got to do is cut down on the turnovers. I think in that first game, we had like six turnovers, and we still almost won that game. We cut down on the turnovers, we can beat Dallas.
Well,
no doubt.
During the Giants' four-game winning streak, they're a plus five. During the six-game losing streak, they were a minus 16. That goes to your point.
Thank you very much. Now, also, if I have just one thing to say before I get off the phone. From 2001 to 2011, I'm not mad at the Giants. Everybody's due to have a bad season. But how many teams can say they went to the Super Bowl three times between 2001 and 2011 and won two of them? I'm still proud of them. That's my team.
Thanks for the call.
Okay.
All right, last but not least, I want to end on this. This is from Jason_Forbes_NYG. I hear Antrell Roll and JPP talking big about the Cowgirls. What happened to talk is cheap, play the game. Did you listen to Antrell Roll on WFAN yesterday?
I did not.
I did not either. I saw some tweets about it because the entire media of New York City does listen in when he's on. because never a dull moment for Antrell Roll. And of course, we heard JPP say earlier that blood is going to be...
Yeah, blood is going to be spilled because he said it's going to be a war out there. Both teams are going to, you know, leave it all on the field. I think when you take it out of context, it sounds a lot worse than what he said. I don't have a problem with JPP's statement at all.
I don't either.
I expect it to be a steel cage match. Shouldn't it be? I mean, really.
Yeah, and I don't really look at that as trash talking.
No, I don't either.
You know?
I don't either. I'm looking up the Roll quote now, and it's, let's see. Antrell Roll, according to Ralph Vacchiano of the Daily News, says, the quote is, watching him and seeing how certain games have played out, I can understand why people may say that. I guess the question was, can you keep it close and wait for Romo to make a mistake? Roll says, but going against him, I can't say I personally experienced that. I think he plays the games just as any other quarterback plays the game. I don't see anything trash talking here.
Anyway.
No, I don't see it.
Really quick, two quick points before we do sign off.
Okay.
That is, DeMarcus Ware said that he is going to be back for this game, which is big for the Dallas Cowboys, and will be, I'm sure, a force to be reckoned with for this Giants offensive line. And Sean Lee is out. Linebacker Sean Lee will not play. Paul Dottino has a huge man crush on Sean Lee, so I know you're disappointed you're not going to be able to watch him strut his stuff on the field from the press box.
Let's start with DeMarcus Ware, who's got a sore quad and apparently was at 75% against the Saints a couple of weeks ago. That is certainly an issue. As far as Sean Lee's concerned, tied for fourth in the NFL with 93 tackles, tied for third in the NFL with 4 interceptions, and no, he will not play. Ernie Sims, the veteran and former Detroit Lion, is going to be playing middle linebacker in this 4-3. He has not played middle linebacker since, I believe, it's 2008 with Detroit, and so there is some concern on the Cowboys' part as to how well he's going to be able to run this defense. A big key to watch for is the lack of communication and potential confusion amongst the Cowboys defenders, who, by the way, according to my film study, have not been tackling well lately. A lot of missed tackles, a lot of arm tackles, lazy tackles. Those are the kinds of things you have to take advantage of.
Well, 2 weeks ago, they actually got crushed by the New Orleans Saints. The New Orleans Saints had 40 first downs. Meanwhile, the Cowboys could not even put together 40 offensive plays. So they have had a bye week to try to rectify all that went wrong in that game, and we'll see what happens on Sunday afternoon. We thank you so much for tuning in. Again, just a reminder, in about 30 minutes, head coach Tom Coughlin will address the media. You can tune into that right here on Giants.com or on MSG. And then later on this afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern time, Jim Cordo will join me for Big Blue Hits Live. You can watch that on Giants.com, and the phone line will be open if you have any questions for Jim Cordo as the Giants get ready for the Dallas Cowboys. Please, we welcome you to watch and, of course, be a part of the show. It's 201-939-4513. Have a great day, everybody.